asked her how she was doing. She was fine. She was getting up. She told me that, "Alexis, your dad's being so sweet to me. He's just being so sweet to me." And that was the last time I talked to her. When I came home from work, I checked my cell phone and saw that I'd missed, I believe it was 20-something calls. And I called my father. I said, "Dad, what's happened?" And he said, "Rachel, come home." And I said, "Dad, tell me what's happened. It's Mom. Is she okay?" And my father said, "Rachel, come home." And then he just hung up.
Welcome back to True Crime Brewery. I'm Jill.
And I'm Dick.
And today for our discussion, we've chosen the case of Michelle McNeil, who was killed back in 2007. Now, a Utah physician, Martin McNeil, her husband, was convicted of her first-degree murder in 2007. Now, because of the status of the McNeil family and the bizarre and deceptive history of Martin McNeil's life, we chose it for today's True Crime Brewery. And because they were from Utah, Dick has a Utah beer.
Thanks, Jill. So today we're going to review or talk about a beer from Uinta. I think that's the correct pronunciation, U-I-N-T-A.
I believe so.
Uinta Brewing Company in Salt Lake City, Utah. We're drinking their 23rd anniversary beer called Birthday Suit Sour Raspberry Ale. Now, this is an American wild ale. By that I mean that it's a beer that's introduced to wild yeast or bacteria rather than other yeast. And it's just sort of leaving the brewing vessel open for whatever settles in there. So organisms like Brettanomyces, Pediococcus, or Lactobacillus can get in and make the beer. This gives the beer a pretty funky calling card with a very tart, sour taste. Some people love it. Some people dislike it intensely. So this beer, their 23rd anniversary beer, Birthday Suit, is a sour raspberry ale. Pretty beer, hazy red-orange color. Has a little small head that quickly dissipated. Tart, fruity aroma. Taste is very nice. Sweet up front, tart and acidic next, with a vinous finish. Taste of raspberries, which follows since it's a raspberry beer. This is a light to medium bodied beer, nicely tart, very pleasant. I recommend it.
I'm really looking forward to this beer because I love the sour beers.
I know you do, so let's open it up.
Okay. It is delicious.
Thought you'd like it.
I do. Now in 2007, Martin and Michelle McNeil were married nearly 30 years. Martin's a physician. He's also has a law degree, although he's not a practicing attorney. They have four biological kids who are grown. They have the oldest was Rachel, and then Vanessa, and then Alexis, and then their only boy, Damien.
Right, and they're all in their 20s, correct?
Yes, I believe so. And then they did adopt three children from the Ukraine. And they also had a younger daughter who was 6 years old, who we found out was actually Vanessa, the second daughter's child, but Martin and Michelle had adopted this child to raise as their own. Her name was Ada.
So they adopted their grandchild.
Yes. So altogether, they have eight children.
So what, do you know what happened or what possessed them to adopt the Ukrainian children? Is that just altruistic or because they're Latter-day Saints or... What's the deal with that?
Well, there are different opinions on that. Obviously, Michelle was a stay-at-home mother who really enjoyed and was very good at being a mother, and now her four biological children have left the nest. And I'm not sure if it was her idea or if Martin just wanted her to be distracted so he could continue his outside life, but they decided to get three more from the Ukraine.
You're a very cynical person with that. Well, what's his outside life?
Well, wait until you hear, because this guy has got so many secrets. It's just hard to be objective about him.
Okay. I'm anxious to hear about this.
Okay.
So are the older kids out of the house, or are they in the house, or?
I believe they're out of the house, actually. Alexis is in med school in Nevada. Rachel lives nearby, like 8 or 10 miles away, and works at a dentist's office. Now, I'm not sure what Damien was doing at the time, but he was also an adult. He'd gone for 2 years on a mission that Mormons do when they come to adulthood.
Right.
He'd done a two-year mission in Japan.
They all do missions.
And he was back from that. Vanessa had a drug problem and was living outside the home.
So was she kind of kicked out of the house, or?
I'm not sure if she left or was kicked out, but I did, in the book that I read, The Stranger She Loves, it said that Vanessa was looked upon by Martin as an embarrassment because of her drug addiction and her problems.
Well, certainly. He's an important physician, so he's an upstanding member of the community and probably in the church.
Yes, yes, they're Mormons, although Michelle is more active in the church than Martin is. So let's go back to 2007, and Michelle and Martin are living in a beautiful 11,000-square-foot home with 7 bedrooms, 8 baths. Michelle is a former beauty queen, a very beautiful woman, even at the age of 50. And what happened was around the time Martin turned 50, he changed. He started tanning, obsessively exercising, lost a lot of weight, and he confronted Michelle about her own aging.
Yeah, now he's like a year older than her?
Barely,
like that.
Yes. They're very similar in age.
Right.
He was 50 and she turned 50 shortly thereafter.
Okay. But he's got this new mission in life to be well-preserved. He wants to look good.
Well, we're going to find out later that he did cheat on his wife quite a bit throughout the marriage. But at this point, he just was really changing and having maybe a midlife crisis, I could guess.
Possibly, sure.
Yep.
And 50 years old, losing weight, tanning, exercising.
It has all the symptoms.
Sounds like it.
Yep. So Michelle was very close to her oldest daughter, Rachel, and her third daughter, Alexis. She was also very loyal to Vanessa, but Vanessa was a troubled woman and didn't live in the house because Martin didn't find her to be a desirable member of the family.
Right. And what about the son?
The son, Damien, was very close to his father. No problems there.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the daughters that Michelle was close to, they had frequent contact and shared a lot of things with each other.
Yes, absolutely. They both have nothing but great things to say. Now, I know that happens a lot after someone's deceased, but this does seem like a genuinely giving mother.
We loved our mom. She was great.
Yes.
She's dead.
Yeah, and why? She shouldn't be dead, right? So Michelle had confronted Martin about an affair when he was 50. Actually, he had gone to see Alexis, and when she'd got out to switch cars with him because he was going on a trip, she found a woman's clothing and suitcases in the back seat of the car and confronted her father and said, "We think you're having an affair." The father, Martin, vehemently denied it and actually told his daughter that he wasn't having an affair, spent the night with her in her home in Nevada and seemed to convince her. But then from that point, he did go out and see his mistress, as we'll find out later.
Well, that's pretty good evidence. He's got women's clothes and suitcases in the car.
Yeah, so
he was on a trip to visit his daughter in Nevada?
He was stopping in his daughter's to switch cars, and then he was going to go with his mistress to another location for a weekend.
Uh-huh.
So we go back to March 2007.
Okay.
And this is when Michelle is having some concerns that Martin's having an affair. She has her daughter, Alexis, check his phone records, finds that there are texts and calls in the middle of the night and at all hours to a strange woman named Gypsy Willis. And around this time, Martin says to Michelle, "You need a facelift. I'm going to get you a facelift for a gift. And then we'll go on a cruise and everything will be wonderful."
Sure.
Yeah.
So she's insecure about whether he's having an affair or not.
Yes.
He's denying it.
Yes.
And then he says, "Why don't you have a facelift So you'll be more attractive, basically.
Basically, yes.
Boy, there's red flags all over there.
Yes. The daughter, Alexis, who is kind of the steadfast, steady person in the family, really close to her mother, she has concerns about this. She says, "Mom, you're gorgeous. Why would you want a facelift?" And her mother actually said to her, "I don't really want it, honey, but your dad's getting himself all fixed up, and maybe it would make him happy if I just looked a little younger."
Sure, and maybe he'll stop seeing this other woman because I'll be more attractive to him.
Yes, which is understandable. They've been married a long time, and I don't know if you're aware of this, Dick, but in the Mormon religion, marriage is very sacred. People are married not only for this life, but in their afterlife.
So you don't want to get divorced?
No, that's not a good thing to do. It's not acceptable, really.
Well, so we're not going to do that.
No.
But, geez, this is already crazy
that
she's willing to undergo a facelift, which she may or may not want to do.
Right.
In the hopes of keeping her husband.
Yes.
What you women will do.
Absolutely. So Michelle went to, actually Martin wanted to go to a doctor outside of town, because he felt, or he said, it would be better to go to a doctor who doesn't know him, so they wouldn't be intimidated by his status in their community. So they went to a fairly new plastic surgeon named Dr. Thompson, who gave Michelle a facelift. And it was April 3rd,
okay.
I think. Anyway, it was early April. She had a facelift at Bountiful Hospital, Lakeview Hospital in Bountiful, Utah, excuse me. And they said it did take 9 hours, but the thing that would explain why it took so long was that in the initial appointment, when Michelle went with her husband to see Dr. Thompson, Martin had told the doctor, "Well, if we're going to do her eyes, her forehead, her jawline, let's just do it all at once and get it done."
Okay.
No.
So that's a lot of surgery.
That's what Dr. Thompson told her, and he said, "We don't have to do that much at once," but according to Martin's daughters, Martin was insistent that they do it all at once. It was a gift, and she should be happy to do it.
Yeah, but you're under anesthesia for 9 hours. I think things, risk factors start increasing for that length of time under anesthesia.
And as a physician, I'm sure he understood that.
Right.
Yes. I mean, for all his faults, he was an intelligent man.
Yes, apparently he was,
yes.
Or is. But that's a very lengthy surgery. So I would expect a little bit longer recovery from it because of the length of time it took to do the procedure.
Yes. Now, prior to the surgery even happening, if we can go back just a little bit, Dr. Thompson had prescribed Phenergan, an anti-nausea medication, and Lortab, which is, I think is the same as Vicodin, hydrocodone, for Michelle to take postoperatively for pain. And Martin said to the doctor, "Well, I'm not sure if that's going to work, so why don't you order some Percocet as well? And my wife also has some anxiety, so I'd like her to have some Valium and some Ambien for sleep."
A lot of drugs.
Yeah. Now, he's a physician, and he seemed protective of his wife, so Dr. Thompson says, "Yes, I'll write those prescriptions."
But that doesn't sound like the usual post-op medications that they'd be using.
No, there were 3 extra ones.
And they did this because the husband, who's a physician, said he would monitor the administration of them.
Yes, Martin told Dr. Thompson that if the Lortab didn't work, then they would use the Percocet. If she had anxiety, they would use the Valium.
So most of these, or some of these, were just medicines to be used as needed. They weren't necessarily going to be used routinely.
No, none of them were scheduled. The only scheduled medications she had were her Premarin, which she'd had since she had her hysterectomy a couple of years before. She was on an antibiotic to prevent infection of her incisions. And she was also on, what is it called? It's an herbal. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Arcania or...
Okay.
Anyway, it was an herbal medicine to just decrease bruising.
Okay.
I've had it before. I don't remember what it is. Anyway, it's just an herbal thing. So she was on those, and she did have the surgery, as we said. It was a 9-hour surgery because she had a jowl lift, a lower eye bag removal, an upper eye lift, a forehead lift, and something with her cheeks, which if you look at a picture of her, it's kind of crazy. She's a beautiful woman.
Yes, I've seen the picture.
Yeah.
And I know beauty is in the eye of the beholder, but she's a very nice-looking woman. And as you said earlier, she's a former beauty queen. It looks to me like she's held up pretty well.
I think the most she might have needed at that point in her life was a little Botox for the crow's feet. And need is a widely used term. I'd say she might want a little Botox.
Right.
Certainly wasn't necessary.
And I have a friend who's a plastic surgeon, and I was just briefly discussing this with him.
Oh, yeah?
While we played golf today. And he said that's a lot of surgery to do all at one time.
No, he does a lot of faces, so he doesn't normally do all that at once?
Not at all. No, he typically divides it up.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, the husband's a physician. He knows at least something about what's going to go on, and he's going to monitor her post-op course.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see where the surgeon said, sure, we'll do the whole thing.
Yes. Yes, Dr. Thompson, when he testified, when I watched the court case, he had testified that Michelle didn't speak a lot at the appointment. It was Martin did most of the talking, but she agreed with Martin on most points. She didn't say anything about, she was concerned. She did say she was concerned, but she never said she didn't want to do it in front of Dr. Thompson anyway.
Right, so we're going to proceed with surgery.
Yes. So they did the surgery, and Martin wanted her to go home that very day. But Alexis, who was there on spring break and staying with her, said, Mom really wants to spend the night. She's in a lot of pain. And Martin was angry and wanted her to go home. But then Dr. Thompson did step in and said that it would be best if she did spend the night and get some pain control, get monitored overnight. And Martin did finally relent and let that happen.
Well, I think that's a good idea. Again, she had 9 hours of surgery.
I know,
It'd probably be a good thing to monitor her overnight and make sure everything was okay.
Yes. So she does go home the next day. Alexis is there to take care of her. Her face is bandaged to the point where she can't see at all. Obviously, her eyes are covered, her forehead. She's had a lot of surgery.
Well, she's had surgery from her chin to her forehead, so I'm sure she's all bandaged up.
Yes, so that week, Alexis takes care of her mother, and there's one evening where she leaves her mother to be cared for by Martin, and when she comes back the next morning, her mother is highly sedated. She can't wake her up, so she goes to her father, and she says, something's wrong with Mom. She's very sedated. She won't respond. And Martin said, oh, really? Oh, maybe I did something wrong and gave her too many of her pills?
There's a little suspicious act right there.
Yeah.
So. I mean, how do you do that? He's a physician. He knows dosing and how to do it. So there shouldn't be any error or, oh, maybe I gave her too much medication. He should know exactly how much to give her.
Yes. Yes. So Alexis insists on taking care of her mother the next day. She bathes her, takes care of her. Her mother's kind of out of it. She's had Phenergan, she's had Percocet, she's had Valium, and Alexis helps her bathe and gets her cleaned up, and the next morning has her moving around. The eye bandages are actually removed so she can see a little bit, and Alexis said she had one Percocet during the day and one at bedtime, and that was all she required. No nausea medicine, she had no anxiety, and she was pretty with it.
How many days post-op was this?
It was within the first week. I'm not sure of each day, but it was within the first week.
So a few days afterwards. Yeah, I would expect that to be typical, that she needs less and less analgesia and sedation.
Yes. Michelle wasn't a person who took anxiety medication prior to surgery. She wasn't a person who had trouble sleeping, so she'd never been on a sleeping pill or an anti-anxiety medication before. So she had no tolerance for any of these drugs. So Alexis said, Mom's doing good. She went to an appointment with Mom. Dr. Thompson said everything's going great. Alexis went back to school.
Alexis is gone. Mom's taken care of by Father again.
Yes, so Alexis goes back, I believe it's a Tuesday, maybe it's Tuesday the 10th, right around there. And when she calls to check on her mother that evening, Martin says her mother's asleep. I might want to say at this point that there, during when she bathed Alexis when she was home taking care of her, I didn't mention that her mother had said something about when her father had given her all these pills. She said, "Alexis, he just kept giving me pills. I told him I didn't need them. If anything happens to me, just make sure it's not your father."
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a bombshell.
Yeah, that was something I should have mentioned. That's important.
So she's worried. I mean, I guess she's aware enough that she's being fed pills that are sedating her excessively.
Yes.
And she wants someone to be looking out for her in the event of any untoward event.
Which was really shocking to Alexis. She said, "Mom, what are you talking about?"
I'll bet.
But she was convinced to go back to school. Her father wanted her to go back. Her mother wanted her to go back. So she went back to the school and allowed Martin to take care of Michelle. So this, when we're at 8 days after surgery, Martin and his six-year-old daughter, Ada, found Michelle in the tub unconscious. So he had just picked up Ada from school and brought her home. And Ada had run in, or he had allowed Ada to run in, looking for her mother, and found her in the tub. Now, Martin said he went to work that morning, and he actually was photographed at his insistence, getting an award at a safety fair. And then he left work around 11:30 a.m. to pick up six-year-old Ada from school. Now, when Ada found her mother in the tub, Martin sent her to get the neighbor, and she went next door to the neighbor, who was Christy Daniels, and asked the neighbor, "We need help. My dad needs help." So Christy Daniels ran over to the McNeil home. Now, she'd never been in the home. She did know Michelle from, you know, passing and saying hi, because they were next door neighbors. They actually shared a driveway. And when she went into the house, Martin said, "I need a man. I can't get her out of the tub." So Christy went and called her husband, who was in the neighborhood somewhere. Christy said, "I'll call 911," and Martin said, "I've already called 911. Now, when Martin called 911, he told the operator that Michelle was not breathing and he couldn't lift her from the tub, so he drained the water. He said he was performing CPR, even though he couldn't get her out of the tub.
Well, there's a lot of questions here.
Okay, let's address them.
Okay, so I'm going to go back to where Ada and Martin return from school or whatever.
Okay.
And they go into the house, and the little girl goes upstairs to see her mom. I assume because she wasn't downstairs, so she's going up to find her.
Yes.
And finds her in the tub. And she calls, "Daddy, Daddy, Mommy's dead in the tub," or something.
Well, she didn't say dead. She said, "I can't wake Mommy up," or something like
okay.
that.
Okay. So he goes running up, and she's in the tub. Submerged, or?
Yes, he said she was submerged.
Okay.
But here's the thing. Ada said to investigators that her mom was laying on her back fully clothed under the water. Martin says that Michelle was leaning forward over the tub as if she was drawing a bath and passed out, and was leaned over the tub with her feet on the outside and her head underwater.
Well, that can be taken care of pretty quickly. If that's the case, why didn't he just pull her off the tub and start CPR? He said he needed help lifting her out of the tub, so she must have been in the tub.
Right. Good question.
So there's some inconsistency there.
There are.
And she's fully clothed in the tub, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, well, when emergency workers and the police got there, she had a sweatsuit top and an undergarment, but nothing on her bottom half. And she was lying in the tub.
So face down in the water?
No, face up.
Supine.
Supine.
Okay. So she's lying on her back.
Yes, on her back.
Facing up.
Yes.
With her top dressed and her bottom undressed.
Yes. And there's a dispute as to whether her feet were in the tub or sticking up out of the tub.
Okay. And this guy who has lost weight and has been working out and stuff cannot lift her out of the tub to perform CPR. He has to call somebody to come help.
Well, here's another thing about Martin. He had told his church and his family that he had cancer in his, I think it was his left great toe, and he'd been walking with a cane.
cancer.
Toe cancer.
Toe cancer.
Yes.
It's very localized.
Yes.
Okay.
And that he was going to die from that, he had told his parishioners, or, well, they weren't his parishioners, but his fellow churchgoers and his family.
So this toe cancer prevented him from being able to lift his wife out of the tub.
Well, he intermittently used a cane and said that he had a neurological disorder and toe cancer.
Give me a break.
It kind of came and went. Yeah. Well,
there's no reason he couldn't have gotten her out of the tub.
Well, you would think so. Now, Michelle was 180 pounds, but that's not that big. That's a normal size adult.
Well, she's maybe a little zoftic.
A little chubby, but certainly not anything that would be too difficult. Well, the neighbor, Christy, went and got her husband. I forget what his name was. But he came in, and he did help Martin get Michelle out of the tub.
So they got her out of the tub, and they could perform CPR.
Yes, and Christy said, I know CPR. I'll do the chest compressions, and you do the breaths.
Good.
A couple of suspicious things here is that Michelle had a lot of mucus and some bloody stuff on her face. And none of that got onto Martin's face, even though he was supposed to be doing the mouth-to-mouth. Also, Christy's husband said he didn't see any chest rise during CPR, which obviously chest rise is pretty important to show that air is getting into the lungs.
So he wasn't getting air in
her
when he was doing his CPR.
That's what's implied, yes.
Okay.
So when the emergency services got there, they took over the CPR. And at this point, Martin was ranting. I told her not to do it. I told her not to do it. Why did she get this stupid surgery? I told her not to.
But that's contradicting what was earlier reported, that
yes.
She was lukewarm at best on the prospect of surgery, and he was pushing for it. She was agreeing to it because I guess she was afraid he was having an affair and she wanted to be more attractive to him. So it's not that he wanted her not to have the surgery.
Right.
I told her not to do it.
Yes.
God, give me
he
a break.
Said that, and people who arrived at the scene said he was more angry than upset, very angry, having an outburst, slammed the door, walked outside the room.
Well, yeah, because he told her not to have the surgery.
He told her not to do it.
All her fault.
Right. So he was angry. And what happened was emergency services did CPR, and then they turned Michelle's head, and she expelled 3 to 4 cups of fluid from her lungs.
Okay.
Okay.
So maybe there's some drowning going on?
Maybe, but don't you think that if Martin had been doing CPR correctly, that would have happened sooner?
Well, if the chest compressions had been done, she would have expelled the water.
I mean, yes.
The mouth-to-mouth stuff wouldn't make any difference.
Yes, but he is a physician.
Right.
So don't you think he would have known that she has fluid in there?
You would surmise if you found your wife in water that there's water in her lungs.
Right, right. So Martin said that he went to work that morning, received his award, went to pick up Ada at 11:30, and then when he and Ada got home, Ada wanted to see her mother, and Michelle was in the bathtub unresponsive. So what happened to Michelle? She really had no health problems other than high blood pressure, and she was minimally overweight. Now, she was otherwise very healthy. She had seen her regular physician for a check prior to surgery. And 6-year-old Ada, of course, said that her mother was fully clothed and lying face up in the tub. And then we have that contradiction of Martin saying that Michelle was leaning over. And why was Michelle naked from the waist down when the neighbors got there?
Well, I guess you could say that she was naked from the waist down because she's getting ready to get into the tub. So the pants and panties came off, and she's getting ready to take the top off to get into the tub.
Yes, but her 6-year-old did say she was fully clothed.
With pants on?
Yes, yes.
And the pants disappeared?
Well, they didn't disappear. They were in a wadded, bloody, wet pile in the garage the next day. There was some blood. The tub water was kind of a grayish red. There was some blood.
From what?
Well, we don't know if it was from her incisions or what that was. Okay. She did have a lot of incisions.
And Martin says that he found her leaning over the tub.
Yes.
Which kind of contradicts itself, because then he wouldn't need help getting her out of the tub to do the CPR. So I'm going to discount that and figure that she was found in the tub, face up.
Also, her pills were missing. So the plastic surgeon, as we said, had prescribed Lortab, Phenergan, Percocet, Ambien, and Valium. Now, to his daughter Alexis, that was strange that she was on so much medication. And when she asked her dad, when she finally arrived, where were the pills? Actually, I think it was Rachel, because Rachel lived closer. She asked her dad, where are Mom's pills? He said that maybe the police had taken them. But then later, when Rachel spoke with her brother Damien, who Damien is, and his girlfriend were there, Damien said that, well, Dad asked us to get rid of the pills because looking at them made him sad.
So why is the daughter asking about the pills? Is she suspicious about what's going on? Does she think that he overdosed her or something?
I don't know. Probably.
Because to me, that's kind of a weird question to ask. You know, here's your mom who's dead, and you're saying, well, where are her pills? I think she's already suspecting him. Well, I guess that's the case because, as you said earlier, Michelle said to the daughter, if something happens to me, make sure your father didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess she's already suspicious of what's going on.
Well, yes, and I think that investigators wanted the pills because it was
sure.
A good possibility of an overdose.
So, and where'd the son and his girlfriend come from? They weren't in the house when this all occurred. They came over afterwards.
No, they came after, yeah. So they were local.
So he must have called them too.
Either he called them or one of the sisters called. That was never specified. But Martin wanted the autopsy because he was afraid the police might think he had something to do with it. And then he wanted the funeral as soon as possible. So she died on a Wednesday. The funeral was that Saturday.
So I can see wanting the autopsy to prove your innocence.
I don't know. Are you really thinking about that if you lose your wife? It's a little odd.
No. Well, I think the way he's looking at it, I need to get the autopsy done so the finger won't be pointed at me.
Or maybe you'd want to know why your wife died if you were legitimate.
Possibly. But then he destroys all that by having the funeral very quickly.
And well, he did have the autopsy done.
Right.
Yeah. And then the funeral was on Saturday.
So it's not very long after she died that she's had the autopsy and the funeral. Boom.
Yes. So at the funeral, a lot of people were upset with Martin's eulogy. Now, in the interest of fairness, Michelle's family, her sisters, her mother, did not like Martin from the beginning. They had a lot of bad feelings about him for years. But they all felt that his eulogy, his speaking about his wife, was inappropriate. He mostly talked about, God, I did so much for you. I was a bishop. Why has this happened to me? It was all about Martin.
Poor Martin.
Yes.
So that's not going to win him any favors.
No. And the medical examiner did determine that the cause of death was cardiovascular disease, myocarditis, and hypertension. The toxicology report said that the drugs in Michelle's system were at a therapeutic level. So although she had taken those meds, each of them was at a therapeutic level. However, I don't think they were meant to all be given simultaneously as they were.
So was myocarditis something that was recognized before death, or is that something that was discovered at autopsy?
That was at autopsy.
And we know she was hypertensive because she was on medication for that.
Yes, actually, they did talk to her primary care physician, who said her blood pressures had been in the 150s over the 100s, so that's significant high blood pressure.
That's pretty up there.
Yes.
Yeah. And the myocarditis, did they put that as the cause of death or just that it was a finding at the autopsy?
It was cardiovascular disease.
So that was the cause of death?
Yes.
So they're saying that she had a heart attack or an arrhythmia or what?
Well, they said that if she had myocarditis, it wouldn't have been recognized on her pre-op EKG, electrocardiogram.
It probably wouldn't have been.
So, according to them, a person with myocarditis could be asymptomatic. Do you find that to be true?
They can be asymptomatic.
Okay. And can they have an undiagnosed arrhythmia?
Sure. That's how people with myocarditis have sudden events like death, that they have a fatal arrhythmia. You can have a ventricular tachycardia type of thing that will cause you to die.
Okay. Now, what one of the medical examiners had said, or the toxicologist, I can't remember which one, the drugs oxycodone and promethazine, either one could prolong the QT interval, and that could lead to...
Well, it can lead to what's called torsades de pointe.
And what is
which
that?
Which is, that's a ventricular tachycardia, and where the lower chambers of the heart just beat really rapidly, and that can cause death.
Okay.
So the medications, I guess I could look at it as she had this underlying myocarditis, and the medications that she was taking contributed to an arrhythmia that caused her to die.
Now, what about her hyperkalemia? That was found. I couldn't get the exact blood level, but it was found and mentioned in court that she had hyperkalemia. Can you tell us what that is?
Sure. Hyperkalemia is an elevated potassium level in the blood.
Okay.
It's a favorite trick of spy novel writers in how to kill people. You just inject them with potassium and it causes an arrhythmia and people die without knowing how high her potassium level was. I mean, you can get that if red blood cells burst apart, have an elevated potassium, because most of the potassium in our body is intracellular, not extracellular.
Okay.
So I don't know. I mean, unless it was sky high. I mean, if it's mildly elevated, I'd say it's probably due to breakup or lysis of red blood cells. If it was really elevated, then I might be suspicious that someone injected potassium into her.
Right. It's really hard to tell, though.
Yeah, because we don't know the level.
Yes. I also read that the level can change after death, make it hard to really...
Sure, because things start breaking down and leaking into the extracellular space, and you can find an elevated potassium.
Right.
But it'd have to be pretty high.
Pretty high for death or pretty
for
high
death.
For... Okay. But when people have a heart attack, is their potassium high?
No.
Oh, it isn't. Okay. So what else can cause hyperkalemia other than an overdose of potassium?
Well, it's just... If it's not highly elevated level, if it's mildly elevated, it's just a matter of breakdown of red cells, red blood cells.
Okay. Well, they did say she had 4+ lysis, so that means breakdown of the red blood cells?
That does. So that, you know, again, without knowing the actual potassium level, if it was mildly elevated, so the normal value is somewhere between 4 and 5, and if she had a potassium of 7 or 8, which is certainly elevated but not markedly so, that could be explained by breakdown of red blood cells. If she had a potassium of 10 to 15, I'd be thinking something along the line of her being injected with potassium.
Okay. And that is that something he could access as a physician?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's easy.
Okay.
We can always get potassium chloride. Yeah, that to IV fluids when you're administering those, and common thing, common additive.
All right. So if Martin had given her potassium, the MA really wouldn't be able to tell then, for sure.
Well, they would if it was, again, a markedly elevated potassium.
Okay.
Or if there were needle marks on her body, they could...
Which she might have IV sites and other things already from the surgery. Although, would you be able to tell a needle mark that was a week ago from a needle mark that was that morning?
Sure.
Oh, you would? Okay.
Yeah, you can tell.
Okay.
And it might have been, I mean, it didn't have to be IV, although that's a better method if you're trying to kill somebody. I mean, maybe if somebody gave her potassium, they could have given it intramuscularly.
Could they have given it as a pill, or would that not be effective?
That wouldn't do anything.
Okay.
Or it wouldn't do what you would think in terms of causing death.
Okay. So, as I said, the toxicology report that said the drugs in Michelle's symptoms in Michelle's system were at therapeutic levels, and the case was closed, according to the medical examiner. But his daughters, Alexis and Rachel, were highly suspicious, as was Michelle's sister, the girl's aunt. So disagreements occurred regarding how the younger children would be cared for now that Michelle had died. They had the four adopted daughters. They right. had Giselle, Elle, so many, Sabrina.
And Ada.
And Ada. Okay, so they had four young, right. from like 12 so, to 6 years
so
old.
So they had these young kids
yes.
with no mother to care for them.
Yes.
And the father's out working.
Mm-hmm.
Or hopefully working. He's got to bring money in.
Yes. So I think Damien was actually at school, maybe at Brigham Young. And Alexis was in med school in Nevada. And Vanessa had drug problems and wasn't reliable, yeah. as far as we can tell.
She's persona non grata.
Yeah.
She's not going to take care of the kids.
No, but Rachel, she has a job at a dental office. So it's not a career necessarily. She says to her dad, I'll quit my job and I'll take care of my younger sisters, which makes sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, she's not beholden to her job. She's young enough and she can do the work.
Yeah, and that's, you would think the girls would need a family member to take care of them at this point. They've been through a huge trauma, especially Ada, who saw her in the tub.
Right. It must have been really spooky.
But Martin would have nothing to do with that. He said he was hiring a nanny and... Then he asked Rachel to go to the church, the Mormon temple, with him, and this was the 12th or the 13th, to go there and pray with him about how they would choose a nanny. And Rachel said, well, that's odd. My dad doesn't really go to church much anymore. But she was pretty upset about her mother's death, to say the least. So she went and met him at the temple. There was some kind of weird interaction where she was in the temple with him, and he wanted to do things separately from her. And she went outside afterwards and couldn't find him. And then she'd driven over to his office, which was right across the street. And he wasn't there. And he called her on the cell phone and said, come back to the temple. Where are you? So she came over to a bench at the temple, sat with her father. And a brunette in her 30s came over and said, hi, I'm so sorry about your mother. I was at the funeral. I'm a nursing student, too. Maybe we could talk about that. And Martin said, oh, really? What's your name? And wanted her number. And Rachel just thought, what the hell is going on? I don't care about this. My mother just died. Who is this woman who actually sat next to her while her father said he had to go to the bathroom and chatted with her for a while? And she said her name was Gypsy Jillian Willis.
So does Rachel know the same information that Alexis knew about her mother's concern that dad was having an affair?
Not yet.
So she doesn't know anything about that.
No.
She just thinks it's kind of weird that this woman shows up.
Right, right.
Out of the blue.
So then when Rachel did speak to her sister Alexis and tell her about the woman, Alexis told her, well, that's the woman that mom thought dad was having an affair with. So Martin said to Alexis and to Rachel that he's hiring a nurse he used to work with to be the nanny for the younger children. And they said, well, what's her name, Dad? And he said, oh, I think it's Jillian? Jillian, maybe it's Gypsy Jillian Willis? And Alexis said, Dad, we know who that is. Mom thought you were having an affair with her.
Yeah. Duh.
Yeah. Because Michelle had confided in Alexis that she thought Martin was having an affair. Alexis had done an online search of this woman, checked the phone records, and found out that the woman he was speaking to at all hours was Gypsy Jillian Willis. So Alexis confronted him, and he denied that he was having an affair. He got very angry and defensive about it.
Best defense is a good offense. Holy yeah. cow.
I know.
This is way too convenient.
Yes. And it was actually after Alexis and Michelle had researched his phone records and confronted him with it, it was the very next day that he told Michelle she should get a facelift. So I find that very suspicious.
Absolutely.
And that was very out of the blue.
So they're looking at hiring this woman.
Or well, that's the only interview they did, and she had no nanny experience. But she got the job and moved into the McNeil's house less than 2 weeks after Michelle died. Now the daughters, Alexis and Rachel, who don't live there.
He's a player.
Oh, they were furious.
I imagine.
And Rachel actually put a blog online asking for info on Martin, and she discovered numerous affairs that he'd had with many women.
Not just Gypsy.
He's been
a busy boy.
No, but Gypsy seems to be his obsession at this point. Well, she's the one that he actually did the killing of his wife for, if we're to believe that, which he was convicted of, so I believe it. Not just for that reason. So Alexis and Rachel, along with their aunt, who's Michelle's sister, go to the authorities. They meet with Jeff Robinson and Doug Whitney at the county attorney's office. Now, there's no evidence of murder, but they discover faked college transcripts and a history of fraud from their father.
Now, so how did they do that? I mean, what were they? They were researching just his backstory?
Well, they went and they told the county attorney's office, I think it was Doug Whitley they talked to, and they told them about all their concerns and his affairs, and he decided, well, let's find out if this guy's really a doctor even. So he was a doctor, but when they looked at his undergraduate records, they found that those had been forged. So he was smart enough to go to med school and to pass all the tests, but he never really got an undergraduate degree.
So he never graduated from college?
No. He used false transcripts to get into med school.
Whoa. Smooth.
He also had a history from back in his earlier days of check fraud, where he'd opened a checking account in the name of someone who was deceased and spent over $36,000 in 2 days writing bad checks. So he did have a felony record, which I don't know how that was never discovered.
Was he in jail? Did he serve time?
He did when he was younger, yes, right before Alexis was born. I think he was in prison for 2 years. He was already married to Michelle. Now, his son Damien, he stuck by his father, and he was the only one that really did that. And 2 years went by with Martin and Gypsy living in the house, flaunting everything, ignoring the children.
So Gypsy wasn't being much of a nanny to the little kids?
Not according to the older children.
Yeah, but, you know, they have an agenda because they are suspicious of their father not only having an affair but murdering their mother. So they're going to be looking at him with great suspicion.
Yes, right. But Gypsy did have a lock on her door, and Martin said it was because he wanted her to feel comfortable with a man in the house. But according to the younger children, Gypsy and Martin were in that room together quite often.
So I guess the lock didn't work.
Well, it worked for a different purpose than he said. Now, in January 2009, Martin and Gypsy were arrested, but not for the murder of Michelle.
No? What was it about?
It was actually for fraud. Now, Gypsy had been the live-in nanny who didn't cook or clean for the kids, and the adopted daughter, Giselle, who was 16 years old in 2009, was sent back to the Ukraine to visit her sister. Giselle called her cousin several months later and said that she'd been abandoned in the Ukraine and wanted to come back to the U.S. What they found out is Martin and Gypsy had stole Giselle's identity and her social security number for Gypsy because Gypsy had some IRS debt and bad credit, so they forged the identity and gave Gypsy a new name of Jillian Giselle McNeil with Giselle's social security number. And he also told people that they were a married couple. And for the date of their marriage, they used Michelle's funeral date.
Wow, that's pretty smooth. Jesus.
So it's almost like they were flaunting it and trying to get caught. It's just craziness.
That would seem to me that they're really stupid about this.
Well, they're very self-serving. So meanwhile...
So they got caught.
So they got caught and arrested for that. And in the meantime, the relationship between Michelle's daughters and their brother Damien became very strained. And as a side matter, and something very sad, that once Martin was sentenced, Damien stopped talking to his sisters, and in 2010, he killed himself. Alexis and Rachel were so devastated, but it did strengthen their resolve to get their father to justice.
So was there any suicide note or anything?
That was not mentioned. I don't think so.
So?
But he did have a history of some bipolar.
Yeah?
Yeah.
But the timing is interesting.
Yes. It's a little bit strange that he did it at that point. Because I think that, well, even as Rachel and Alexis said, they all really looked up to and loved their father throughout their childhoods. So it was probably doubly hard on Damien as a male.
As a boy. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So the only way that Gypsy could get off of her fraud charges was agree to testify against Martin in any future legal proceedings.
Yeah, how's that work? Is this a deal that she made?
It's a deal she made so she wouldn't have to go to prison for the fraud.
So there, somebody's looking at Martin for other things, like the murder of his wife.
The county attorney is definitely looking into that because they found out about his other lies and his history.
And his daughters are just pushing like crazy to investigate.
Yes, and they're taking information to the medical examiner. So Gypsy admitted that her meeting with the daughter at the church was staged, but she wouldn't admit that it was planned prior to Michelle's death, because if that meeting had been planned ahead of time, clearly she would have known that the murder of Michelle was in their plan.
Absolutely.
So she had never admitted that she knew of any plan to kill Michelle.
Sure, but she wants to keep herself separate from that so she's not charged as an accomplice.
That's true. Now, just as an aside, Gypsy did attend Michelle's funeral.
And, yeah, why did she do that?
Well, during the funeral, she sent texts, nude texts, and sexually suggestive texts to Martin.
Nothing like livening up a funeral with some nudies.
Well, she said she wanted to be there for him, so I guess she was.
She was. All of her.
All of her. So at this point, the county attorney asked for the medical examiner to review Michelle's autopsy findings in light of all this extra evidence, the affair, the strange behavior, the nanny, just so much stuff. Not related to the murder, but then in a way related to the murder. So the medical examiner at that time reviewed her findings, and she changed the cause of death from natural to undetermined.
On what basis?
On the basis that it was a cardiovascular death, but it could have been caused from the medications.
Okay.
Okay.
So the medications that were administered to her contributed indirectly or maybe directly to her death?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, in 2012, Martin got out of prison from his fraud charges, and his daughters and investigators really believed that he was dangerous, and they asked the county attorney's office to review the case. Now, one thing that caught the county attorney's office's attention was that the EMT had written that Michelle expelled water from her lungs when they began CPR with her. If Michelle had coughed up water when they did CPR, that means that Martin didn't do CPR appropriately while he was waiting for help, or else he would have brought the water up. And I think they're referring to before the neighbor got there.
Well, yeah, I have a tough time with that a little bit. Just he was administering CPR, allegedly, while she was still in the tub before the neighbor got there.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that means she should have expelled water. I certainly would think that when she's out of the tub and they're doing competent CPR that she would have if she had water down there.
Okay.
And I don't recall looking at the autopsy or the autopsy summary that anybody said anything about fluid in her lungs.
Well, no. I think it was all brought up, wasn't it? Well, or would there be a remainder?
You could still tell that there was fluid down there that was a contributing factor or the factor for her death. So.
Okay. And if that was there, they would have said the cause of death was drowning?
Right.
Okay. Well, with that, they did think that their circumstantial case had built up enough to tip the scale and go to the DA.
Sure.
So in August of 2012, Martin was brought in on charges of first-degree murder. Now, it had taken 5 years, but in 2013, the trial began.
Long time. Justice moves slowly.
Yes, it does.
So what the prosecution was probably saying that he drugged her and either drowned her or drugged her and her heart had a rhythm problem and she died.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, he contributed to her death.
Yes, and there were people who testified that he was jovial at the funeral and had actually made the comment, "I'll have to get used to life as a bachelor, golfing with my buddies and stuff."
What an asshole.
Yeah, I think so. They also talked about how he seemed angry with the 911 operator, and when the EMTs arrived, his behavior was scary and erratic. He was actually yelling at her, as I said, "Why did you have a facelift? Why? Why did you do that?
Why? Why?"
So Gypsy testified at the trial, too, which was really interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd believe much of anything that Gypsy has to say.
No.
Because she's trying to save her own skin.
And she was forced to testify, yes, to keep herself out of prison. She was subpoenaed, yeah.
Anyway.
So she testified that they had a relationship which began online, an online chat, and it turned sexual. She clearly minimized their relationship on the stand, and the jury saw through it. There were so many texts and calls. Even on the funeral day, there were 34 texts between Martin and Gypsy, several of them during the funeral.
And they never married. They were just together.
Yes. Yeah, so Gypsy is clearly thought of as his motive for the murder.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, they questioned whether she was involved, but they really wanted to get him, so they did give her that deal of going ahead and testifying against him.
And I would certainly take that if I can get away with things.
Yes. And prior to Gypsy, he had another mistress who testified. Her name was Anna... Oh, here it is. Her name was Anna Warthall, and she had a long-term relationship with Martin while he was married to Michelle. She owned a laser hair removal clinic, and McNeil was her medical director. The clinic closed because it wasn't doing well, and she was going through a nasty divorce, and Martin volunteered to be a liaison between Anna and her husband in the divorce. They started an affair which lasted from about March 2005 to October 2005.
So we got at least one other person that he's been intimate with.
Oh, but there's much more to it with her. She actually had conversations with Martin about killing people. He told her how you could give someone a heart attack just by giving undetectable medications, how he had tried to poison his mother when he was a child, and how when his brother had tried to kill himself several years ago, by cutting his wrists in the tub, Martin had pushed his head under the water and killed him. He thought of it as a mercy killing.
Whoa. Martin, you've been a very bad boy.
Yes. So we also had Alexis and Rachel testifying against their father. Alexis told the jury about her suspicions, and coroner Dr. Todd Gray, he actually did a follow-up to the autopsy that was done by the other medical examiner. I don't know. What was her name?
Doesn't matter.
Okay. So he did the follow-up autopsy and gave his opinion. And he did not classify Michelle's death as a homicide, but he did say that it could have been a drug overdose that caused the cardiac death.
All he said was it was undetermined.
Yes.
He didn't say it was natural causes. He didn't say it was a homicide. So
no.
He's kind of in the middle.
Right. Now, the defense said that water in her lungs wasn't hard to understand because Martin had tried to do CPR with Michelle in the bathtub, and that's a nearly impossible thing to do because he couldn't lift her, which you kind of said that's possible.
Right.
You know, being devil's advocate, you would say that's possible.
I did say that, and I think the defense was probably correct in that.
Yes. So the defense conceded that Martin was a cheater, but they didn't feel there was any evidence of murder.
Okay.
Okay.
So what we have is a lot of circumstantial stuff that makes him look guilty.
Yes.
And he's probably not a very likable person. He sounds like a real prick.
Yes, I think he is.
So what happened?
Well, it took 11 hours for the jury to deliberate, and they found Martin McNeil guilty of murder.
Yeah. So this, to me, this is one of those situations where you're maybe not real sure, but you got such a thoroughly unlikable person, you're going to say, yeah, he did it.
Well, not just unlikable, but his behavior was all very suspicious.
Well, it certainly was, but I don't think it was necessarily indicative of murdering his wife. You know, there was enough other stuff going on where I'll bet the jury said, we're going to convict this guy.
Well, 11 hours is a pretty quick time. They had actually sent questions back to the judge about certain witnesses, and even with that, it took them a very short time to make their determination.
Yeah, and again, I think that goes back to just dislike of him as a defendant.
Yes. Well, I think what we didn't mention also is he was convicted of sexual abuse. Shortly after Michelle died, he had molested, was it? It was Rachel while she was in the home. And also there were accusations by the daughter Giselle that he had touched her inappropriately. So he wasn't likable. He wasn't a good person, and that was proved.
Were these sexual abuse allegations brought out in the trial?
I don't know if they were brought out in this trial, but he was convicted of them in other trials. So he was guilty of them.
I don't know that that's germane to the discussion of whether he caused the death of his wife.
Well, if you're saying that his unlikability played a role, is what I'm saying, then that would certainly make him unlikable.
That certainly would, if that was something that was brought out in that trial.
And what about sending Giselle back to the Ukraine? What a low blow is that?
Well, that's another reason to dislike him.
You have to wonder why he wanted to adopt those girls.
I'm not sure he wanted to. It was probably his wife wanted to adopt the girls.
Oh, no, I think he pushed for it, and I don't know if it was to keep her busy or that he wanted young girls in the house.
Maybe both.
It might have been both, yeah. So I know we usually do cases that are unsolved or that have some mystery to them. I feel that this is pretty well solved, that he did kill his wife. I feel pretty confident about that. But there are just so many aspects to this case. I thought it was worth a chat. It was worth an episode.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I am probably a little bit less convinced of his guilt, although I'm leaning more towards guilty than not guilty.
Okay.
But I think he's just such a thoroughly despicable, duplicitous person that he would be convicted, and he is.
And he got away with it so very long. I mean, you could say he's paying the price, but for most of his life, he got away with this behavior.
Yeah, it sounds like he's led that kind of double life for a long time.
Yeah. And you have to wonder how much mental illness had to do with that. It almost seems to me like a personality disorder, like just complete narcissism.
Oh, I think so.
Sociopath? What's the difference between a sociopath and a psychopath?
I'm not exactly sure, except that a sociopath doesn't have any empathy or feelings. Either way. And a psychopath is kind of just nuts. That's not a great explanation, is it?
Well.
But, I mean, a sociopath has no remorse, no feelings, and can be quite normal in appearance.
Okay. So we'll wrap it up for today. Do you have anything else to add about this case?
Nope. No? I think he probably did it, but I think his prickiness contributed to his conviction.
Well, it certainly didn't help him, did it?
No, it didn't.
And I'd like to say, as someone who watched most of the trial, that he had very skilled and helpful defense attorneys, so he did get a fair trial. I would definitely say that. So we are available with our True Crime Brewery episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. And you can access True Crime Brewery by going to any of those sites. If you'd like to leave feedback or learn what's up and coming with True Crime Brewery or our other podcasts, visit us at tiegrabber.com. You can join our page on Facebook or you can follow us on Twitter. You can also become part of the True Crime Brewery family by subscribing on our website, and that's only $1 a month. And you could also make a pledge if you want to support us on patreon.com/truecrimebrewery. As always, thank you for listening. Bye-bye till next time.
See you later.